It's 8 past 8, the Grill Team with Gus, MG and Maddie Johns.
Now, The Water Diviner, a film directed and starring Russell Crowe, in my opinion, is the best World War I film since Peter Weir's masterpiece, Gallipoli. Mm. It's a different spin on the legend of Gallipoli. In the closing scene of Peter Weir's, you might remember, gentlemen, it puts a spotlight on the horrors of the Anzac trenches as they fought the Turks. Well, in the opening scene of The Water Diviner, we're in the Turkish trench. Now, this is a film which is not only highlights the loss of life for the Anzac from an Anzac perspective, but shows the loss of life from the Turks and what they had to endure in defending their homeland. It's a great film, and we're joined on the line by the director of the film right now, Russell Crowe. Welcome to the Grill Team.
Morning, boys. How you doing?
Hey Russ. Mate, 2014 turned into a hell of a year for you. Premiership with South, and now The Water Diviner. Congratulations.
Yeah, it's coming along.
It's not bad.
Yeah, not bad so far, but it's been a hell of a busy man. I was actually just talking about that yesterday. You know, I began this year, I was actually directing the film. Then we had a Christmas break, and in that Christmas break I did 4 concerts up in Coffs Harbour and recorded 10 songs for a record.
Wow. Right?
Then I finished directing the movie, finished it in Istanbul, went to an airport, got on a plane, went to Moscow, went to Rome, Rio de Janeiro, Los Angeles, New York, London, Paris, London, Pittsburgh, made another movie, and then came back here to go straight into post-production on The Water Diviner. And through the course of that, you've got South. You're going
wow.
Well through the season. And then I've been in Atlanta making Nice Guys with Ryan Gosling.
I'll tell you what, I've had a big year. I went to Newcastle, Port Stephens, went to Aberdeen on the weekend.
And, yeah, you've been on fire.
Along the way, the Cessna Goannas got beaten in the grand final again.
Russell, I haven't seen the movie. Maddie has, and he came back and he was absolutely raving about it. So we're all looking forward to seeing it in here. Why do you think people listening to us now on Triple M should go along and see The Water Diviner? Give us your thoughts on it.
Well, you know, as stories go, you know, if we go to the movies to witness a narrative opening before us, it's a pretty good one, you know, and it takes you on a real journey. Now, obviously, because, you know, Australians and New Zealanders are intimately connected to Gallipoli, there has a resonance and a meaning to us that's quite deep. But just the simple journey of it, the Australianness of the journey, the Australianness of the humour, I think there's so many things that open up as the story goes along, and so many things that you begin to realize. And it was one of the things that happened to me when I read the script. I had this sort of revelation, and that was sort of embarrassing in the moment, but I was fascinated by it at the same time. I didn't know how many Turkish dead there were at Gallipoli.
Yeah.
You know, the Australian number just pops into mind.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that other perspective. To me, it was like I said, you know, it was sort of embarrassing that I didn't know.
Mm.
But intensely of interest to me to actually, you know, take up from where Peter Weir's Gallipoli left off. If you remember the end of Gallipoli, the last frame is a freeze frame of Mark Lee's character being shot.
Yes.
So if you can imagine, unintentionally, right, but it just happens to work out this way, this is the story of what happens next.
Mm.
The people who were the family of that kid who got shot and what they go through in their grief.
Russell, it's just a great touch, and it almost—that's what I thought. It was almost a continuation when there is the focus on the Turkish trench at the start, as opposed to the Anzac trench, and the focus on the Turkish side of the battle. It certainly is thought provoking. I mean, the respect and warmth they extend to Australians in the present day gets taken for granted to a certain extent. And as you said, in defending their land, they lost 70,000 men, and at the conclusion of World War I, saw their empire just looted. I mean, it makes you wonder, would we be so warm and respectful if it was us defending Northern Australia from an advancing army? If that's the case, what in your opinion, when you had a look at the movie, and why are the Turks so respectful of the Anzac legend?
I think it's got something to do with the intensity of it, man. But I think also, you know, as the cards of history have fallen and you know, and the things lie where they lie, the Turks look at us and go, they're as much of a victim of this situation as we are.
Yes.
You know, because there was this bigger political thing at play.
Mm.
People got drawn into it, and you know, I often wonder, actually, Matty, quite seriously, if you could bring to life one of those young men who died at Gallipoli, if you could bring him to life now and say, hey, man, you know, 100 years later, we're actually still involved in armed conflict in the same area of the world. I wonder how he'd feel about that.
Mm.
Wonder how he'd feel about what his sacrifices added up to.
It was amazing. We share such a bond. They say it was the birth of our nation, Gallipoli, gave us our identity. But, of course, at the end of that war, the emergence of Ataturk as a leader. And at the end of the, you know, what he did for that country, and he sort of eased Turkey towards Europe. In a lot of ways, it was the birth of Turkey as a modern society. You know, mm-hmm. he stepped it forward.
Definitely.
And that's what Istanbul is now. I mean, yes. MG and I went last year with the grill team, Russell, and we couldn't believe one...
What a place, right?
Oh, an incredible place. You imagine taking MG there as well?
He was looking for tabs.
He literally didn't have a clue. He didn't have a clue, but he wandered around with
I think he's maturing very nicely, actually, Mark.
He certainly is now. There's no doubt about it.
Can I say something, Gussie?
Yeah.
Just something in the movie to look out for. There's always a beautiful little cameo in the movie. Russell's chasing a young Turkish boy who he believes is stealing his bag. In fact, he's sort of guided into his hotel because everyone's doing it tough and he's trying to get a bit of business for the family. But as Russell's chasing this young man through the streets, I notice a certain South chairman, Nick Pappas, standing there with white rabbits.
Come on, you didn't actually see that. You must have been let in on that.
Standing with white rabbits, saying rabbits, rabbits on the streets of Istanbul.
Selling rabbits on the streets of Istanbul.
It's a beautiful little touch.
Nick Pappas, for all his, you know, wonderful work with South and his incredible legal work and his battle with News Corp and blah, 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 you know, he's always harbored this desire to be a thespian.
He's actually
a pretty fair piano player if you ever get him, you know.
Oh.
If you get him onto the third glass of wine near a piano, you'll find that out.
Okay.
It's tough getting him onto the third glass, though.
I'd like to know what he does at six.
I asked him, would he play a cameo in the film? And he agreed because he had some business at that end of the world anyway, so he was going to be there.
Perfect.
And he arrived on the day and we dressed him up as a rabbit cell and he's just looking at me going, you.
Because I saw it, I turned to the fellow next to me, Billy Birmingham, Jumbo Tommy, and I said, I think that was Nick Pappas. And I started joining, he's selling white rabbits. It was Nick Pappas.
Yeah.
We're chatting to Russell Crowe on the Triple M Grill team. More coming up, including the inside word on Hugh Jackman's diva behaviour on set.
Now, Russell, talking about blokes that you do some work with, is a great friend of ours on the grill team, Hugh Jackman. And, of course, you worked alongside him.
What a grub, mate, eh?
He's such a grub.
Such a diva.
He's such a diva. I mean, what was it like working with him on Les Mis? It is as bad as everyone says he is. He's
awful.
He's just a terrible guy.
I love him, mate. He's great. He's a fantastic fella. And the thing that I was really sort of impressed by when I worked with him, he has that sort of, he understands that there's a leadership portion involved in what we do. You know, it was just really gratifying because, you know, there was a time back, you know, 10 or so years ago where, you know, he was on a particular path and it certainly wasn't going to go to where he's gone now. And he's just lived up to it so spectacularly and he inhabits the job of being a film star and being a lead actor on a film set in such an even and open way that it was just—it's a wonderful time to be on a film set with him. You know, I mean, we had some great things to do together. We had to sing while we had a sword fight. You know,
I mean, we were just been in New York and we saw him in The River. I've known Jacko since we went to kindergarten together and he's always loved being on stage. That's been his absolute passion. He loves being in movies, but he loves the thrill of having to get it right, or if you get it wrong, you have to sort of think on your feet. What about you? Is that your sort of passion too, that type of, you know, theatre over movies, or what's your take on that?
I did so much theatre when I was a young fella, man, you know.
Yeah.
I did, you know, 415 performances of the Rocky Horror Show, for
That's
example,
it.
You know,
yeah.
Touring shows and stuff. But I kind of transferred my theatre stuff into rock and roll for a long time, you know, because it was actually a heightened version of what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, where it really is it's absolutely your responsibility once you step on that stage to make sure that show goes to the right place, you know.
Yes.
And you don't even have the confines and structures of the narrative and what have you, you know. So once I started making big films, I didn't never really have the desire to go back and do theatre again. It comes up every now and then, but you know, then I'll go and do some live shows, you know, like the ones we did earlier this year, and you know, in the last few years I've done live shows in London and New York and Los Angeles, you know, in St. John's and Newfoundland and you know, lots of different places. So you know, I kind of, once I had the second baby, I had to sort of put that aside, you know, because what my year used to contain was, you know, half the year on a movie and half the year on the road kind of thing, you know.
Yes.
And then I kind of started feeling like I was stealing time from my kids, so, you know, I don't do it in a big way anymore, and I don't think we've paid a dollar in advertising since a tour in 2006, actually, the last big band tour we did, because it's all social media now. we announce we're playing at the Gramercy Theatre in New York, the tickets go on sale and they're gone in 15 minutes. So, it's kind of, and you just announce it on Twitter.
We're chatting to Russell Crowe this morning on the Girl Team. Up next, what will Russell think of Gussie's South's jokes? That's in just a minute.
Just something, Russell, I was wondering as I was laying in bed last night. The movie The Water Diviner, of course, you directed, and when you're a director, it gives you a lot of, gives you a little liberties. Now, the leading lady, Olga Kurylenko, the Ukrainian lass.
Beautiful girl.
Yes,
yeah, Gus. And the rest of the cast are wonderful too. What
yes, they are. Now, I must say, through the film as director, now, the back half of the film, the tension, the sexual tension between your character and hers is palpable, but there's no kissing scene. Now, Russell, if I was director of that film...
Shower scene.
She would have passed out of mouth to mouth the whole the old box and dice. Yeah.
Well, here's the funny thing, right? Because in the script... that happens.
Oh, right.
So we shot that.
Oh.
So everything that you're wishing for, I did
experience. It's on the cutting room floor.
So I'll just take 30.
But when I was
30?
Standing back from the narrative in post-production, I was sort of adding up, how many days are they actually in each other's company?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he arrives and then he goes off on further, you know, he arrives in Istanbul and then she gives him a tip on how to get to where he needs to go. And so he does that. And then he sort of comes back defeated and all the doors are closing around. But I added up the days, you know, the sunsets and sunrises. And they only really know each other for 7 or 8 days.
You know,
in reality.
And, you're,
right,
and, you know? You're right. And your
like
character.
That's like a Kentucky tour, though. You can get a lot done in that
and
time.
And your character, you've lost a wife. She's lost a husband.
Right.
You know what?
This is an Ottoman woman post-First World War. And so I started to see it, you know, not just as had been written in the script, which was like, you know, hitting certain, you know, points for an audience, but I started to look at it culturally and say, I don't think that Joshua is the sort of man who would actually begin anything until he completes his promise to his wife. You know, even though you've got something beautiful that you shot and you're in love with, you have to be prepared. And this is a phrase that they use in the business, so it's a bit of an ugly phrase, but you have to be prepared to shoot the puppy. You know, this is something you've constructed and you loved and all that sort of stuff. But if it's getting in the way of how people are perceiving the narrative, then you've got to be bold and hard on yourself and be objective and just get rid of it. You know, and what I found is the first time I showed it to a group of Turkish people, they loved the film. They thought it was kind of in a way, man. They were so emotional about it because it's like finally somebody's actually letting us have our say. So incredibly generous to Australia. They've let the bodies of our young dead lie on their soil. They, you know, accept the fact there's going to be tens of thousands of Australians mourning at Gallipoli every year, and they facilitate it and they look after it, you know,
and they accept
a certain responsibility. So it's a beautiful thing. So to be finally the person that actually lets them have their perspective in a feature film like this is cool.
But you did get to shoot it, which is even better. At least you had a little kiss anyway.
You've had your cake
nice.
And ate it too, Russell.
Yes.
Mate, well done. Nice
that's
touch.
That's kind of what I'm getting at. I could give you a much shorter answer.
Yeah. Hey, Russell, before we let you go, mate, a couple of things. Firstly, congratulations on South Sydney Grand Final win last year. South Sydney,
year,
a great...
I'm over 5th, mate. It's only just a few weeks ago.
Oh, sorry.
Isn't it still bright and shiny in your mind?
I apologize.
It is in mine.
Trying to shut it out.
It was so good. And the working class... Sydney's team, we call it.
Oh,
of course, Gus.
Off.
See, we've got a Rooster supporter
piss
here.
Off.
And I just want you to listen to something. This is Gus Waller.
When South gets successful... Sorry, Russ. I'm talking to Matty here. Why, because South gets successful, does it all of a sudden become Sydney's team?
Because...
the league is stronger because Sydney...
Because...
Bullshit.
People go to their games. That's why, as opposed to Roosters.
Are you a member of Eastern Suburbs, mate?
I beg your pardon? Yes, I am a member of Eastern.
How many members?
You and your three mates.
Yeah. we've just gone over 6,000.
Do you know he said to me...
I think just so far at the moment, we're about 21, 22.
There you go. That's the difference.
That's just for the next year, you know?
It's been lovely to talk to you, Russell. I've got to go.
Russell, do you know, this bloke told me...
I've been watching your show, Gus.
Have you?
Oh, dear.
How's it going?
Yeah, it's going well. Thank you, mate. Dropped over 30 kilos. So, yeah, very happy.
Cool. I mean, you know these things. If it's serious, you get to a point where you actually can't outrun it anymore, you know?
Right.
And if you really want it to change and stay changed, it's about diet, you know?
Yeah.
And my body's beaten up, mate. You know, you can, you know, wrestle tigers and what have you.
Yeah.
And not every time it goes well, you know what I mean?
Sure.
And joke I always make is I've been picking up injuries since 184 AD.
Yeah. You
know? That is good.
That's good.
Well, I tell you, you need to change a lot of things, including your mindset on rugby league. Russell, have a listen to this.
This is a South jokes question. How do you inflict 12 months of pain
on a Rabbitohs fan.
Buy them a membership.
What do South fans use as protection during sex?
A bus shelter.
Two South supporters are in a car. Who's driving? A policeman.
Yeah.
Michael Maguire was caught by a speed camera this morning. Yeah. Who'd do anything for 2 points? What is your wife trying to tell you if she's wearing a Rabbitohs shirt to bed?
You ain't gonna score.
That's what enough. Is the difference between a South supporter and a family pizza? The family pizza can feed a family. You know you're a South supporter when a Halloween pumpkin has more teeth than your wife does.
That's a bit crook.
That's a bit...
What's the difference between a cactus and the South Sydney change room? A cactus has pricks on the outside.
Yes.
Don't you just love that elitist attitude that the Roosters have?
Mate. Yeah, well, you know, what I think we have to reverse this Sydney Roosters thing, because you're the eastern suburbs Roosters, mate. You're out there. You're way beyond the, you know, Rushcutters Bay, you know. You got nothing to do with the city. South Sydney starts at the base of the bridge, just like North Sydney starts at the base of the bridge on the other side.
Mm. Well, Russell,
the gladiators told you
this. It's going to be like the Hatfields and McCoys.
Yeah, Russell,
I've got my thumb down on that,
mate. Before we let you go, Russell, we are a music station. It's something we ask all our people. Have you got a Rod Stewart story for us?
Rod Stewart?
Yeah.
What's this in relation to?
Right, because I always tell people my Rod Stewart story. For instance, I told Wayne Swan and Tony Abbott my Rod Stewart story.
I must admit, when you started telling Wayne Swan, I was surprised you were going to go ahead with it.
Okay, here's why now, Russell. I'll tell you the story. We can't let the listeners...
A bit of music will go over the top.
A bit of music will go over the top. So Rod Stewart's, you know, that famous nightclub Stringfellows in the late 70s in Piccadilly in London, and he's having a ball. He's dancing around, music playing, spandex, the whole box and dice. He's probably having too good a time. People are going, you know, it's the late 70s, thrills and pills, and he's probably had too many of them. And he's dancing around, and suddenly he collapses. Young hearts be free
Well, Matt, that's a very interesting story. And I'm sure that your listeners need to hear that.
I'm not
they will view you a completely different light.
Russell, on my last day of the job, and it will be my last day, I'm going to tell the listeners.
Russell, thank you so much for being a part of our show this morning. Of course, The Water Diviner is out on Boxing Day, December 26th. It's been a real pleasure talking to you this morning. Thanks, mate.
Cheers, boys.
Russell, great job. It's a terrific film.
Thank you very much, Matt.